Before we start with today's episode, I want to address a common challenge that I've noticed among HVACR professionals. They often struggle to keep up with the advancements in heat pump technologies. That's why here at the ESCO Group, along with the HVACR Learning Network, we have an amazing library of courses to equip you with the essential skills for handling today's inverter-driven heat pumps. And better yet, we're offering free access to the first two chapters of our most popular course on the fundamentals of high-performance heat pumps. Check out the link in the show notes to get your free access.
European radio shows have replaced hosts with AI hosts. I can see that happening easily. I have an app right now where all you need to give it is 5 minutes of your natural speaking voice or a recording in which you spoke, and then say, okay, Mr. DeMiranda, make this content in Russian. And they'll be speaking Russian, but they'll sound like me. So it keeps it authentic, and you know, it also helps to kind of match the mouth movements a little bit better. But that's huge, because I think that sometimes when we're developing this content, especially for energy efficient technology and this stuff that's right on the cusp of the cutting edge, we're developing it and the rest of the world is going to utilize it eventually too.
This episode is brought to you by DNR Learn, pioneers in interactive HVAC training and e-learning solutions. DNR Learn, in collaboration with HVAC, our learning network, offers innovative courses that empower HVAC professionals to master new technologies like high-performance heat pumps and inverter-driven systems. With a focus on flexibility and accessibility, DNR Learn ensures that learning never stops, whether in the classroom or online.
Well, hey there, HVAC pros and enthusiasts. Are you ready to take your skills to the next level? The HVACR Learning Network has just launched an exciting new e-learning course, High Performance Heat Pumps. And guess what? We're giving you free access to the first two chapters. Whether you're in the field, training for that next step, or simply want to sharpen your expertise, this course is packed with everything you need to understand and master high-performance heat pump systems, especially inverter-driven cold climate heat pumps. And the best part? You can access it anytime, anywhere, right from your favorite mobile device. It's HVACR learning made flexible and convenient for you. So what are you waiting for? Click the link. Dive into the HVACR Learning Network and start your free trial today. Your journey to HVACR mastery begins here. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us once again on Did You Know? The ESCO HVAC Show. So I'm actually broadcasting remote today. I was doing some training classes up here in northern Minnesota. And so I'm hanging out at their local library, brand new library, and had the opportunity to go out and do some videos and some photos of some heat pumps running up here in Minnesota. You know, we keep talking about the capabilities of new technology and how technology is really changing our industry in so many different aspects. And so as we start looking at education and training on new products, we want to spend a little time with one of our partners, DNR Learn. And today we're hanging out with David DeMiranda. How are you, sir?
Hi. Hi, everybody.
So, David, welcome to our community. Everyone, let us know where you're joining in from. I want you all to spend a little bit of time today, not just learning about DNR in the training, because we partnered with DNR on a variety of different training projects brought through the HVACR Learning Network. And you're going to see a lot more DNR around as we start doing training on new technologies. And we've got heat pump water heater training that I really think you're going to enjoy. So maybe one of our future episodes, we're going to, we'll do some demos and show you a little bit about what we're doing in that realm. It's a kind of a hybrid virtual and actual reality, I would call it. Tom, thanks for joining us. And we'll have a variety of people with us today. Paul, thank you for hanging out with us again today. We're going to actually spend some time today diving a little bit more into education, right? And becoming better educators and ways that we can relook at the classroom. So when Dave and I first started talking about, you know, opportunities in training, this one really kind of, it's important for us because David, we talk about technology all the time and you and I were just like geeking out over technology before the show. I wish you would have been able to hang out with us. It was a lot of fun. But it's not always about just the technology. It's like, you know, how do we teach? And when we have these new technologies, how do we implement them into the classroom and be comfortable with them? So there are so many things that we're going to be able to help you out with. And like I've said many times before, we want to know the things that you're looking for in the classroom. So I put together a feedback form. Grab that. I'll keep it over here in the chat. You'll see that QR available. If you have some things that you'd like to learn, whether it's technology, whether it's more about refrigerants, regulations, or just teaching and how to be a better teacher, let me know. That's what we're here for, and that's what we will continue diving into. So, David, tell us a little bit about you first before we get into training, and like tell us a little bit about you getting into the industry. I love hearing, because it seems like we all like start in HVAC and then we end up in places we don't always expect to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually started in education, so my background is in education. I taught art for a while, visual design, media. So that's kind of where my media specialty developed.
See that.
Yeah. And then, you know, everything went virtual for a while during the pandemic. I got a bug for teaching online. I had to learn so much different software by stuff engaging and interesting. And I kind of found that, like, that was the new passion. I really enjoyed, you know, education innovation and learning all these new softwares. So when I went back to the classroom, things just weren't the same. And I eventually started trying to find ways to, you know, embrace this online learning curriculum. And I found DNR Learn. It's been 18 months with DNR Learn now. And I have a little bit of experience with instructional design before that. And yeah, this has been really kind of like my main focus and passion for the last 18 months is developing my instructional design chops and seeing how you can translate in-person stuff into, you know, the virtual realm.
What's a challenge for all of us? I mean, I know myself, like, when I got into teaching, you know, it was back in 2018. So I was just getting my feet wet when COVID came around. And like in 2019, I started doing some virtual classrooms, basically like this with some of my contractors, right? Just helping them stay up to date with technology. It wasn't like, it wasn't broad and broadcast. It was very basic. And then COVID happened. And then I had to learn new skill sets, right? I had to learn how to communicate without a classroom, or I had to learn how to use technology to make my teaching better. And it's been like a constant evolution for me to be better at it. And we get it at our conference a lot. We have educators that will come up to us and go, okay, my students are on their phones all the time. They love interacting, you know, with digital media, and I can barely type my own name. Well, like many of us, we were technicians. We didn't grow up with tools, but now we're educators. So embracing the new tools and technologies is kind of critical for us to be successful.
Absolutely. I would say for sure. And I mean, there's kind of two different schools of thought in education right now, where it's like, do you try to compete with the entertaining and appealing stuff, or do you, you know, stick to the classics and just, you know, hope that you can appeal to them in one way or another. And I think it's about a little bit of a mixture of the two. I mean, I focus now mostly on adult learners, but, you know, especially the younger learners at the technical schools and stuff too. I mean, you know, your attention span's shorter, short form content. You know, it's kind of hard to be that guy lecturing for 40 minutes up front and not break it up with something that's engaging in some sort of authentic way for them. So for me, it was like that too. It's like, they're already on their laptops. You know, they're supposed to be listening to my course, but if I don't have a way of keeping them accountable, asking a quick question, something like that, then ultimately you feel like you're teaching to the tops of people's heads. That's what you used to say, because they're all on their phones. And instead of me, you know, you don't want to get upset about it. You want to embrace what about that works, you know, and I would get them on their phones immediately so that if, you know, people walk in and they see kids on their phones, the assumption isn't that they're checked out. It's that they're utilizing this
something
as a new resource. Yeah. Just like how, you know, the HVAC ESCO classes, they're all available on mobile. Yeah. Right. And I try to pose questions during my live seminars where they answer on their phones. So they have a reason to have that phone in their hand, you know, and scan those QR codes.
Empower it.
Exactly. You know, especially us, we're in the technology field. So there's no realm that where we could push back on the technology. And I don't blame any of the innovations we've had in the last 15 years for education, I think it's only made it easier and more appealing. I think there's so many different ways to reach your average learner. You know, we talk a little bit about the multiple intelligences when we get into adult education. And one of the big things is it used to traditionally be, you know, one type of student or one type of learner finds success and not everybody else finds success. You know, we're in a realm where there's a lot of technology, you know, people taking vocational classes. I went to vocational high school, you know, and that was just what I was interested in at the time. And I felt that I learned hands-on better. And so I wanted to be in a scenario that mimicked that more often. But now with technology, you can create a curriculum that appeals to every different multiple intelligence and every style of learner. So they can find success in English, even if they're not linguistic, or they can find success in engineering and mathematics, even if they're not super analytical. You know, so that to me, I think that's one of the more empowering things about modern education is that we can make it work for everybody.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly, it kind of falls in line with the question that Paul had on, you know, especially when we first start introducing it into the classroom, it can feel like there's a big disconnect, right? Because we're so used to looking them in the eyes and helping instruct them and getting that like emotional and visual feedback from our students. And man, as soon as you said, put a set of goggles on, or you put them in front of a laptop, a computer, or, you know, whatever, mobile device of some kind, you know, sometimes that can change. And so as instructors, it feels odd sometimes, but as it should, because it is something new. You know, I can remember myself, like the very first time I walked up to a Lennox Pulse furnace and I went, whoa, I don't know where to begin. This is uncomfortable. I just felt almost disconnected from the things that I know until I stepped back and I started getting resources for that and I learned, and then it became more comfortable. And it's kind of the same way when we start talking about digital media for education. It's happening. I mean, it's if it's not already in your classroom, it's coming. And if you haven't already been asked by your administration to start utilizing it, you probably will, because it's so successful in so many other curriculums. And yes, it is a little different than an English class or a math class, but the whole principles of learning and multi-generational learning is really what the focus is here. And so that's kind of what we're going to dive into. We're going to help walk you through some ways to kind of rethink your education, rethink your training techniques, and get a little bit more comfortable with technology in the classroom. So I don't know if you can run these from your side, Mr. Tebby. Thank you for joining us down in Louisiana. If you can't, I can progress through the slides and you can just tell me when to move on forward.
Yeah, we can move on to the next slide. We'll start at slide number 3 and kind of get into it. Okay. Paul, I'm keeping that in the back of my memory banks. I'm going to address specifically a few strategies that'll help you out with that when we get to it. This is an overview of kind of what we're going to be getting into today. I broke it down into 4 little bites. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. It helps with pacing. It also helps kind of compartmentalize knowledge. But we're going to begin with adult learning principles. This is how you design an effective learning environment. Uh-huh. And then we'll move into virtual interactive tours, where we'll talk a little bit about that VR, how do you keep someone engaged. Of course, engagement strategies. And then last but not least, online on-demand training, because that's actually what we share in common, right? Yep. And our international has developed some really great virtual impact, modern training for HVAC. So we can move on to the next slide. Mm-hmm. So with adult learning principles, let's start first by talking about the approach to learning, right? The adult approach to learning is specifically different because adults have unique needs and different expectations. So designing an effective learning environment, it really requires a little bit more thoughtful planning. We're going to discuss a little bit of the key strategies like addressing learner motivations and leveraging experience. And then we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the theory behind it. So you can move on. Yeah. Starting off on the right foot.
Okay.
First moments of a training are crucial. One of the things, we already did it. We appealed to value. And what I mean by that is with adult learners, we're all here taking time away from our, you know, professional life or our personal life to learn some professional development. The first thing we want to do is explain to them the value of the content, right? So for example, today, you know, you're gonna walk out of here with some strategies and some tools that'll help you to become a more successful modern trainer. And then of course, I like to always pose a question to the group, which, you know, Clipton already did. Of course, you got some experience with this as well, but, you know, allow people to give us some feedback. Tell me what you already know. You want to gauge the level of your room before you begin, so you're not wasting time on remedial stuff. And also, it just helps to generate the discussion, which you'll see is really kind of the cornerstone of our education. You can move on to the next slide, Noel's five assumptions of the adult learners. So this might be a lot here. It's the last one, sorry. So the five assumptions of the adult learners, really the big thing is that adults are already self-directed as they mature. We used to call them the captive audience, right? Children are a captive audience. And believe it or not, there wasn't much differentiation between how you teach adults and how you teach children until Malcolm Knowles came around and made these five assumptions that have kind of become the foundation for developing training and content for older folks. And the big thing is, like I said, self-concept, right? They become more directed as they mature. The other thing is learner experience. We already touched on that, but everyone here brings a wealth of experience to the learning process. It might not be I'm a teacher for 15 years. It might be purely HVAC, but you have experience that you can bring to the classroom to help us learn in a more authentic way. And then we have our readiness to learn. You want to learn. You want to get better at your profession, of course. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, orientation to learning means that you cannot just sit here pushing information on people. Create problem-solving opportunities, right? We all have experience solving problems, so why not put that to use? You're going to remember your content better when you do that. You're going to connect with it better when you do that. And that's really kind of our main goal. And then talking a little bit about pacing and time management, this is the part where you can set yourself up for success, but be realistic, you're never going to master time management at first. This is purely an experience thing.
Yes.
I'm sure in the beginning you ran through stuff. You know?
Yep.
Some musicians still play their songs faster when they're live. It's a thing, you know, you feel the energy, but you really want to try to slow it down. One of the ways I do that is these compartmentalizing information, you know, having these sections. But another thing is to setting little timers every once in a while. At first I had 10-minute timers constantly going off on my phone, but just having things broken up into smaller sections helps because you can kind of trigger that own memory. Wait, we're 15 minutes in and I'm still on this. Or I rushed through this one part, because this happens all the time. You know what you know, but you don't know what the audience knows. So sometimes you can rush through remedial stuff because it's no longer interesting to you, or you feel like you see the one person you're connecting with kind of, you know, checked out a little bit. But it's important to kind of keep that steady pace the entire time, because if you lose somebody, they might not raise the hand and tell you they got lost. Yeah. Right? So it's important to pace as well. Now let's get into some of the fun stuff. Let's get into our exploring virtual interactive tours. I don't want to go too long without a hook. I'm on slide 8 now.
Okay.
Exploring virtual interactive tours. Yep. And you know, you might ask, why is it so beneficial? How is it so important? And I do want to acknowledge a few things first. You know, I'm not trying to compete with the attention span of the modern learner. I'm trying to amplify my content to reach the modern learner, right? So it's not, if you're not a YouTuber with every single last, you know, bell and whistle technology, you can't compare. It's just about taking one thing away from this that you're going to use in your classroom now. In virtual classes, how often do I take a break during the class? I like to break up my classes into pieces, period. So although this one's completely virtual, you know, we stop for questions, we stop to take a look at the VR. If I'm doing a virtual class, you know, in person, where I'm doing a seminar where people have VR on, I really like to break it up by having people demonstrate the VR on another screen. So
no, sure.
What I mean by that is we always mirror what the person watching the VR headset is seeing for everybody else. It engages the whole classroom, because like how Paul said earlier, you know, it feels like there's a disconnect. There's just a one person experiencing, everyone else is kind of sitting there. So one way to make sure everyone else is experiencing it is to have that mirrored onto your screen. Typically, your VR stuff does that already. It has a casting function where it allows you to do that. And it just involves everybody in those realistic scenarios. So everyone has an opportunity to directly
see or explore.
Yeah. Now, do you use a experienced student, someone who's already familiar with the technology, or do you try to focus on just any student so that everyone feels like it's a new place to be?
I like to pick someone who seems right down the center. So like the most experienced person isn't going to, once again, we'll go back to pacing. They're not going to wait for people in the room to shout, look, try, do that. They know it too much. And I feel like that's not really approachable for most folks. If they see someone flying through it, they think, oh, they're great. I'm not going to get value out of this. So for me, I like to pick someone right down the center where I know they're going to have either navigational problems, so I can help them navigate. That way everyone knows how to navigate. Or they have, they're not strong in the content. So maybe they're really familiar with VR, but they're not familiar with the HVAC content. So, you know, we kind of want to partner them in one way or another.
No, that completely makes sense, because if we grab someone who is very inexperienced, yeah, it might be intriguing, but they may have difficulty maneuvering some of the controls, as some of the other students are like, no, you need to go over here, or you need to do this, or point at this, and they may not have enough experience to do that. Yet you don't want someone who has so much experience that they're not going to allow for that interaction, that curiosity to develop. So you're going to kind of hone in down the middle and look for someone who has enough experience, but not completely at the top of the learner level, so that there's room, some flexibility for students in either direction. Yeah. And so we're always casting. So we always start one of these trainings then with a single person cast onto a television so that everyone can participate.
Yes, exactly. So, when I do seminars at conventions, even there'll be three colleagues. It'll be me, giving the presentation, a facilitator who's just walking around making sure people scan their QR codes, small stuff like that. And then we'll have a demonstrator, and that person's wearing a VR headset, and that VR headset is mirrored to the presentation screen. That way, we're trying to facilitate an environment, like you just said, where like, if I can get anybody shouting out, go that, click that, no, not this, make sure you turn the power off before you open that. That's the ideal environment, right?
Yeah,
a little bit more approachable. You know, your average tech school, I'm not going to sell them 46 headsets because they have 46 students in the room. They're not going to buy it. It's cost prohibitive. And then if you try to do that, then you're kind of showing them that there's really no appeal to this, or, you know, there's no impact to this technology unless everyone has one. And that's just simply not the case, right? It is a tool, just like how you can set up a learning station. You know, at first it used to be transparencies or an overhead projector. You set up a little station with the most interesting, innovative technology. But you don't want it to be the whole class either, because there's also people who aren't, you know, necessarily, they haven't jumped on the bandwagon yet. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Some of the people ever try to late adopters to this technology. So I think it helps a little bit to have a scenario where it's always hybrid. I'm not trying to replace any of the content you've created. I'm trying to amplify the content you created.
That's super cool. And I've seen some new faces on the show today. We're glad to have you joining us. And if you have any questions along the way, my raid, please let us know. And if I pronounce that wrong, let me know too. Put it in the chat there so I can make sure I get it correct. And thank you so much for joining us from Algeria. We love having, participants, globally joining in, because education is a global effort. We all are going through the same struggles of learning and teaching. And introducing technologies into the classroom is going to be critical. Now, Paul, I don't know if you have any VR setup in your classroom. If you do, I'm curious myself. Do you have all of your students on VR, or are you utilizing like one person as like the demonstrator? Because when we start talking about particularly Gen Z and Alpha is very much in that same boat. You know, they are great problem solvers as a group. You know, they are really good thinkers. So if we can have people in the classroom helping the rest, like they're all growing together, I can see where that can change it. You know, if everyone's on their own VR and they're all doing their thing, they're just doing their thing versus exploring with one person and everyone being a part of that conversation and that growth. Man, I could see the classroom just kind of taking off on its own in that environment.
Yeah, it's really, like, to me, it's the best way to kind of demystify this new technology people haven't used yet. Yeah. But like you said, it's about creating a collaborative learning environment.
Right.
One of the big things I'd say as an experienced educator to some of the less experienced educators is you think at first it's all about putting on a show and doing the most. And the most successful classroom looks like a casual teacher. You become the facilitator, not the educator. And what I mean by that is if you can pose a great discussion or you can create a virtual interactive where people are shouting and trying to help each other, you know, then you're just facilitating the learning. You're not saying today's vocabulary is condenser and we'll learn what the condenser does. You're creating a scenario where the condenser isn't operating correctly and they figure it out together. And I would bet people are going to remember that a lot more than Mr. DeMiranda saying, write down condenser and use it in a sentence.
I completely agree with that. Eugene Silverstein, Professor Eugene, is on with us today, and I've heard that so many times when he's talked about learning skills and habits that the best educators are truly facilitators of the curriculum, and that the students, as they become more interactive, you know, it actually is developing the education, and the facilitator is helping move through that curriculum, keeping the pace, keep exactly like you were saying a while ago, keeping things on pace, but allowing that self-exploration. I know for myself, when it comes to learning, I enjoy getting my hands on something, but if I can enjoy that situation with someone else who has the same passion and curiosity, I'm telling you, if you could have been on our conversation before this thing started, you know exactly what we're talking about. I mean, we're just geeking out on technology and education and going, this is like we're feeding off from each other.
I think that's a big thing that people don't realize, that they think of technology as the antithesis of natural and organic, but it's not the case. You know, just like Eugene said, you're more likely to deliver successful training when they're engaged and they take ownership of their own learning, right? Mm-hmm. So what I mean by creating an organic learning scenario is a scenario where people just feel like they're collaborating to solve a problem.
Sure.
You know, they're not, today we learned about commercial deep water systems. No, today I gave them the issue of a building that's trying to save money and trying to strengthen the power grid for their local utility companies. And I give them some options and they decide why that one's the best. And they might not, they might get it wrong. But that will facilitate an even better discussion.
Yeah, wouldn't it though?
You know, so it's that's really a big thing. Another aspect of, you know, creating a more organic learning environment where people are taking ownership of their learning is there's actually recently an app that makes content into a podcast. Because what we're doing right here is a much more organic way of learning. People are listening to adults converse. It's the way we learned everything. Childhood up, just like how kids learn languages better, just hearing it, you know, it really helps to just hear two people conversing and coming to realizations themselves. So there's actually a podcast app now that you can give them your presentations and they'll make it so that it's not just me talking. There's an AI, Clifton, probing really good questions and even responding to some of the stuff that I said. So that's a really good learning tool out there. Look, I'm not going to plug a particular software. One, you know, they're not paying me. And two, it's really not 100% there yet. I don't like to.
It's getting pretty close, though.
Yes.
Like the my AI Clifton is so good, I will not let Howard have it yet.
Yep.
Well, just know that I will be out here doing these classes and going, I don't remember ever talking about that. And it's probably because Howard's created an AI Clifton doing some content. And it's that good. It is really getting to that point where we can start doing that more in a classroom. I remember when COVID came around, we had educators that were recording the classroom delivery at home, putting it into an e-learning module and sending things to the students at home, whether it was a relay, a contactor, you know, because they already had their basic tools at home, their meters and you know, hand tools, and their interactivity was, here, you watch this and then do that, but record yourself doing that and send that in. And the assignment was them recording what they were supposed to do and sending it back. And then when they would meet as a classroom, everyone was able to share their video experience. So you're right. We do learn very well by being in groups, particularly these smaller groups.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, now imagine I was teaching ceramic arts when COVID mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. So like, how do you create an authentic environment in which you're, you know, learning about a process of creating something when yeah. you're physically having it in front of you?
You sure.
know, created a nice obstacle for me to try and solve, because that's the thing that happens all the time in technical training and education as well. We don't have a classroom full set of this equipment, or you're learning how to use it, so you're likely to break it. And that's the thing you can't afford.
No.
Safety. I don't need you to get electrocuted to yeah. learn that you forgot to disconnect this before you touch that. You know, an interactive that has a buzzing screen that says, whoa, you would have
yeah.
shocked yourself, much better.
Yeah.
Learner and for lawsuits. You know what I mean? It really melts off. So
let the smoke out with the goggles on, not in classroom.
Exactly. So there's a lot of different ways you can use it. Going back to Pure saying they're out in Algeria. Another big thing is too, these AI translators. You know, I would like yes. to speak about, you know, strategies, but also whatever comes up organically. We're talking a lot about tools now and ways that we can amplify ourselves. So European radio shows have replaced hosts with AI hosts. I can see that happening easily. I have an app right now where all you need to give it is 5 minutes of your natural speaking voice or a recording in which you spoke, and then say, okay, Mr. DeMiranda, make this content in Russian. And they'll be speaking Russian, but they'll sound like me. So it keeps it authentic. And, you know, it also helps to kind of match the mouth movements a little bit better. But that's huge, because I think that sometimes when we're developing this content, especially for energy efficient technology and this stuff that's right on the cusp of the cutting edge, we're developing it and the rest of the world is going to utilize it eventually too. And if we make it only in English, it's not necessarily approachable for everybody. And when people are out there now learning that all you need to do is utilize an app to translate stuff, it's a lot more approachable. For DNR Learn, for example, you know, we can't afford to make every single thing we make in Spanish, because we needed to have an expert who's not just fluent in Spanish, but fluent in technical information. You know, but now with this AI tool, we save so much time by doing, you know, our best attempt at translating it. And now that same SME, instead of having to take 16 hours to recreate a course, is just remediating that information and making sure it's correct. Or if you're even smaller and, you know, you need to pay somebody that's outside your company to do that, you just save the tremendous amount of money because you can use this app and then just pay them to make sure it's correct.
So I can see a ton of benefit in that as an instructor. If I'm doing a virtual training and I have, you know, students from a variety of locations, even different campuses, we can all be learning the same content in our own preferred language. And so we're just re-delivering it, making it more understandable and relatable to the individual student.
I don't think we're too far away from it being so ingrained that you no longer have to do it. You know, I think in 5 years, you're creating your video in your native language, and then I'm watching it, you know, in the Philippines, and I want it in a language that's familiar to me. And I just click that I'm in the Philippines and it'll play it in the language.
Really?
I think we'll be there eventually, but for now, this is a good way of doing it. And what I see is a lot of YouTubers and content creators across the spectrum are finding great success in translation, just because, you know, the best example is probably Mr. Beast. He has the one of the most successful YouTube channels in the world. Well, he just doubled his income because one of the second most popular channel is his channel in Spanish. And what's also in the top 10 is his channel in Indian.
Really?
Or in one of the languages, right. I'm not sure exactly yeah. which is the most popular one over there. But, you know, and then he always does market evaluations to see who else is watching the videos, you know. we might be translating this into Spanish eventually so that it can serve Central and Southern American language learners. So there's really a lot out there. I think traditionally it used to be, you know, have visuals to accompany your language, your content, so that people can learn in that way. But why not push it a little bit further?
Yeah. You know? No, completely makes sense. Man, I'm soaking up like a sponge today.
I think this is something that's nice to touch on a little bit too, is how do we foster these discussions? You know, Eugene said, I'm the man. I'm talking about how you can make students take ownership of the learning. That's great, but how? One of the best is just mastering your question stems. So these are all about the purpose of questioning, right? You use questions to diagnose understanding. That's how you could check whether or not people in the room that look confused are confused, mm-hmm. whether or not everyone's on the same spot. It also helps to encourage exploration, because you never want to just take the answer. If someone says something that it's incorrect, it's easy to keep probing to get the correct answer. But what if someone says something that's correct, but just not enough? You know, don't ever be satisfied with the correct answer. Have them explain why for the people that need the explanation. Or if I'm just raising my hands answering questions, I might walk away only retaining half of that. But if you ask me why I thought that, I had to go into a little bit more depth. I'm more likely to retain that information, but then also bridge those gaps later on. So if we're talking about, you know, heat pump, energy efficient heating and cooling, you know, why is this the best option? Okay, because, you know, it's likely to be on during peak hours in which, you know, the grid charges you more money to access power. So things like your HVAC, you know, I think it's the number three energy use in the.
Yeah, incredibly significant.
You know, so any change in the long game makes a big difference. And then people understand that, so they can apply that to a sales scenario. They're going to, you know, an advocacy scenario instead of just understanding insulation. Another thing with questioning is too, I see, especially with adult learners, we tend to avoid discussion because we don't like debate. But you can certainly have one without the other. And one is definitely more useful than the other. Discussion is about collaborating and coming to the best possible answer, right? And making connections, understanding why we got to where we got to. Where debate is more about setting your feet and arguing why you're already correct. That's not at all beneficial to an educational scenario, because you're always supposed to assume you have something else that you can learn. But it's also a little bit more adversarial instead of collaborative. So if you're trying to create a scenario where you're just facilitating learning, you're trying to create a discussion, not a debate. I think debate was more traditional for us. We definitely debated in high school. You know, we definitely debated probably in college as well too. It was the way of proving what you know. But that's what assessment's for. I think it's easier to prove what you know, or even better, to not even realize what you're learning and what you know through a discussion. And then, you know, a couple of days later, you're having a conversation with a friend or a colleague, and you bring up something from that discussion, and you realize, oh, wow, it impacted me. You know, as opposed to our own bias sometimes when you're in a debate, you don't pay the same amount of attention to the opposite side, you know? Yeah. And that's another adult learning practice that we kind of glazed upon, is you always want to acknowledge what everyone else has already learned, take that into the classroom and expand upon it. But think about the other side of that coin. They're bringing biases to you as well.
No doubt. So true.
It's a big thing with our maintenance people, especially because you've spent 50 years becoming a master tradesman. We spoke about it earlier. You can hear a tonal change in something and know that's about to go.
A bearing's getting ready to go on that draft inducer. We're keeping an eye on that thing.
Exactly. And then you're suddenly telling them, well, here's this new thing. You don't know anything about it, and we're going to put it in your building, and you need to know how it works. You lose a little bit of, you know, your agency, but you're also losing a little bit of your confidence because you know that stuff so well. So I like to address the learners in the beginning, because I want to see what biases I'm confronted with, because you need to know them, because it's our number one obstacle in what we're doing. We are trying to get market adoption of these technologies, We're trying to empower people to teach others about new technology. And you can't avoid the bias that this already works. I like this. I understand this. You know, so give people a chance to talk about their prior experiences, because they'll let you know what obstacles you have to overcome. You know, in the art room, it was I can't even draw a stick shift, or I can't even draw a straight line. I can't. It's like, neither can I. I can't draw a straight line. You think Michelangelo can draw a perfect circle? You know, and that empowers them to then want to learn more. And we see that a lot in our HVAC stuff, and especially in heat pump water heating, because I think that with HVAC, it's directly related to your comfort, you know. And with water heating, you know, if things go badly, then you see the difference. But something, it's a little bit more abstract, right? It's just like, there's this unit in your house, it heats your water. The water's gonna be hot when you need it to be hot. And you're gonna have a little bit of a delay when it's cold. That happens no matter what. And whether or not it's tankless, traditional, a heat pump water heater, it's kind of a similar scenario. So it's, in that way, it's a little bit, I think, tougher than some of the more, you know, in the HVAC related stuff, because I think it affects you immediately. And you might not notice, you know, a $70 a month difference in your bill if your bill is $500 a month.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yes.
What are you doing?
We're about in the dispensary
right now is actually a sales class. We decided to specifically address it because it's not, well, one, your average installer and maintenance person might not be interested in it because it's not their job.
Right.
You know, but what we've noticed is that our first call, that's what we call it. You're the first person to pick up the phone, whether it's your wife at your small plumbing company, a secretary in a massive corporation, that first person, they can really help kind of shape the perspective that we look into. And then also a little bit of just, you know, giving some strategies, sales strategies, to our installers. And it's not about going in there with a clipboard and telling them, you know, we've all probably had some bad experiences with door knockers before with solar or whatever it was, but just the simplicity of, hey, I'm here for this septic issue, but while I'm here, I noticed your heat pump water heater is 10 years old and it's likely to fail in the next 2 years. If you emergency replace it, it's going to be, you're going to have to go with whatever we have available. But if you replace it now and we can plan ahead, we can make sure we get the most efficient. We can take advantage of all of the, you know, incentives and rebates. So we found a massive need to try to sell technology and create a course for just the sales aspect of it. But even the terminology sales is like, it has a bit of it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths, you know, it's our car salesman-y. So we take an educational standpoint on it, because if you simply understand the technology, then you'll embrace it.
Oh, absolutely.
The only obstacle to embracing the technology is the education, because it works. You know, it's not a matter of opinion. So the sales to us is a lot of that. It's just giving people the morsels of information they need, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like, you know, here at HVAC Excellence and the ESCO Institute, we're doing the same thing with many of our classrooms. You know, Howard and I have this conversation so regular that, you know, we feel like we ring the bell about technology transitions and refrigerant transitions, and we have a lot of resistance to change from educators. And it's not an opinion that we're trying to bring to the table. It's education. Like, I mean, that's the whole reason we're all here today. It truly is about education, because things are changing, and it's not that we're going to be able to go backwards, right? Our industry is not going backwards. Even if we have changes of administration and changes of presidents, and we're not going to go backwards, we're going to continue going forward. And it's our responsibility to be able to introduce technologies and use technologies to become better, so we can convey our messages clearer and we can be more interactive with our students along the way. So there's a lot of types of discussion and ways that we can have these conversations in the classrooms and with our other professionals that we work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's another reason why, like, you know, discussion is more important than debate in this scenario, because there is no debating to be had in most cases. And if you are discussing or debating something in a installation or, you know, in a technical standpoint, you're trying to, what you're debating is what is the best possible equipment or, you know, system for this scenario. That is not a debate. That is a collaboration. That's us deciding as a group what's going to, you know, perform best for this person so that they're going to get the best, you know, feedback, and then they're going to go and tell somebody else to install it as well. So really, that's another thing we touch on in the sales stuff is like, you know, customer satisfaction is, it's pretty guaranteed if people know what they're doing.
Right.
We touched on this earlier, right? If you know to maintenance your stuff. So it's not just about creating education for your technicians. It's about teaching those technicians how to advocate for this technology to the consumer as well, because they need to know, check that filter every 30 days, or, you know, don't wait for it to beep. The beeping is telling you that something's turned off already and it's not as efficient as it used to be. So there's a few different options there for sure. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that does bring up another point of, you know, other types of education in the classroom. You know, when there is confrontation and differences in opinions on the way that technology is going in the industry, and so we now have that opportunity to start working better on ways to ask questions, right? Ways to address some of these potentially confrontational topics. I mean, I just walked out of this, you know, class in this A2L classroom that I did. I had a lot of contractors, you know, up in an area that doesn't particularly embrace heat pump technology. Some did, many did not. And so as we start approaching these topics, we need to start understanding the types of questions and the way we build these questions when we use them, right? So let's talk a little bit about like the differences between using closed-ended questions and open-ended questions, particularly as we've maybe had a confrontation on a technology.
Yeah. So one thing that comes to mind specifically is at one of my last seminars, we were talking a lot about AI and AI tools. And there were people who came with a bias. They checked out immediately because it, you know, in their mind, it is plagiarism. It's taking from outside sources. So what you have to do as an educator there, you know, it comes with experience, but you can tell body language, you know,
right.
Hey, sir, I noticed that, you know, you don't seem to engage in the AI conversation. What about AI gives you apprehension? Well, and they came out straight up, I think it's plagiarism. You know, well, you can actually train your AI to only consume your information. And, you know, what about if you're not developing content? You know, we're going to focus here on amplifying already developed content. So that's where you can kind of gear it a little bit. So you want to, if I say combat closed-minded responses with open-ended questions. How about that?
Yeah.
So if you're closed-minded, yes or no, everything's a yes or no. AI, no. You know what I mean? Or AI, yes. So how do you turn that into an open-ended conversation? Well, what about if you're the master of your own content, you develop your own content, you're not trying to share it with an AI that will then use it for somebody else's content, but you're just trying to translate, or you're just trying to make it more conversational, you know, utilize an AI app for that aspect of it. You know, don't necessarily use it to create everything. So a little bit of it is just, you know, knowing when to use these different questions, because a lot of times when I explain closed-ended versus open-ended, people, the takeaway is, oh, open-ended questions. Closed-ended questions don't have a purpose. You know, they're too simple. But they work really well. I also use them to cold call. So every once in a while, you just want to ask a simple question to people to make sure they're engaged. It's not about, you know, picking the guy who's on the phone, you know, and embarrassing somebody or making someone feel ignorant. It's just about keeping the pace lively and embracing or acknowledging or confronting when the vibes changed a little bit. People have checked out because you started talking about a new technology. You know, I see it. It happens every convention you go to. There's someone who's evangelical. You know, they're talking about how this new technology, this new model of, you know, HVAC unit is going to change your life, or how this one tool is going to. And you sit through that once or twice, and then you come to your next training with a bias that, oh, this person's just going to tell me about how AI is going to change my life. You know, but we can confront it. We can kind of confront those biases in different ways with good questioning.
Yeah.
Joe, using your AI to clean up your content presentation. One of the biggest ones recently has been Readable. And Readable just makes your content easier to understand and digest to a lower reading level. What I mean by that is, this is something I would not have touched on the first 5 minutes of a presentation. You've been here for a while. The learning level and the reading level of your average American is much lower than you would expect. All right. Wish I had a graphic to make you believe me. Google it if you don't. The average person's reading at a fifth grade reading level. Mm-hmm. All right. If you're assuming people graduated high school with a high school reading level and you're giving them technical content that's very hard to digest, and then the next activity is already applying that information, you've lost most of your classroom. And I promise you, no one's raising their hand and saying, hey, I haven't really developed much past this reading level. It's professionally embarrassing for a lot of people. I think we're demystifying a little bit of that now. There's a stigma behind it because we know there's different learning styles and you might not be this, but you could be that. But overall, it's an issue in technical training is that some of the content is hard to digest. So that's a really good one. You use AI to clean up your content presentation. You can use it to clean up your technical content. And I tend to be in between. So when I write stuff, I'm looking at the blueprint. And when it's done, it's as technical as possible. I don't even understand it. I have to call my SME. And then I use that to make it as simple as possible. And then I like to find a happy medium between the two.
Yep, I agree.
Because it's a big deal. You want your education to start granular and get massive. You know, it's the boulder rolling down the hill kind of thing, where you never want to start with, since you're professionals or since you're adults or since you already know this, I'm going to give you this huge bit. And I'm sure you could find a way to digest it. You know, you want to give it to them in small pieces and allow people, if they want, like a buffet, right? You can fill the plate if you want to, but I'm not going to give you a full plate and expect you to eat it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Austin, that's a great question. So we're all really in the education industry, but most of us have been techs. We have done time in the field. And if you're looking for ride-alongs, I highly encourage you to work with your local HVAC contractor and your local HVAC program, because a lot of our programs will work with contractors for apprenticeships. And I think that's really what you're looking for. We're grateful that you're here, though. We cover some interesting topics. You never know exactly where we're going with our conversations here. But you know, we dive into the entire industry because every aspect of our industry is going through struggles right now. And it's communities like this where we spend time together and growing together through all of it. So glad to have you here with us.
Yeah. And another thing was, Austin, is that like interactives or some of these modular courses, they help to strengthen people before they go on to those ride-alongs.
Exactly.
So maybe you don't have the confidence to do the ride-along yet, or, you know, just overall, like, you know, our vocational school nearby, everything's sequential. So they don't get into the ride-along scenario until they've learned, you know, basic safety and things like that. You can do through an interactive without having actual danger, or how do you utilize this tool correctly, you know, without breaking it, things like that before you can go on the ride-alongs. But yeah, I'm not trying to replace the most impactful and organic form of learning, which is apprenticeship and ride-along. You know, what we're trying to do is mimic it as close as possible. You know, I want eventually that VR, you're going to feel the heat coming off. You're going to hear the sounds, you know, but till then it's just the best next thing.
No, I agree. I think as adults, we don't always realize how many hours a day our students are on their electronic devices. It's incredibly significant in their education. Because if they're going home, if you've got a 17, 18, 19 year old student, after hours, they're probably putting in 6+ hours a day on a media device. And so it's intuitive for them to use the style of learning to help
make sense of what things look like in real life. And so many of these trainings, they can be incorporated in the classroom, but they make some of the best homework assignments ever. And it's the type of homework that, like many of us, when we did homework, we got through our homework and that was it. We were done. However much time it took, we got it done and it was done. But now that we're starting to implement digital media into that, the homework is starting to be repetitive. They're not just going through it once like we ask them. They will go through it multiple times trying to get more comfortable with it. And so it does. It prepares them for those real life scenarios. So there's multiple ways we can utilize digital technology for training, not just during the day in the classroom.
And that's efficient for the teacher, right? You're telling me I don't need to make five videos. I can make one great one in the beginning of the week, and then we can keep going back to that video and realizing how much better you understand it, which is also mirroring authentic learning. You know, back when people had to, I need to fix my AC. Let me pull out the owner's manual and read it. And you got to read it once, put it down, eat dinner, read it again. You know, same exact idea where it's like, you can go back to the same content and realize how much you've learned. Our online classes, we do that a lot. You know, we only have our modular videos. You don't watch more than 10 minutes of content before you're asked questions you need to answer.
Right.
And we don't do that because it's, you know, meant to be like the driver's ed online class and make sure you're on your computer, because that's not how we clock hours. It's just whether or not you pass the content at the end. We do that because I don't want to move on until it's a concept number two, until you're confident with concept number one. You know, I'd rather somebody take an hour to get through 1/10 of the module than to fly through the whole module and not remember 1/10 of it at all.
Sure.
It doesn't reflect our content. It doesn't reflect their ability either. Tom, I saw what you see about group bias.
Yeah.
I was very into sociology. That's where I took all of my electives in college. So I agree completely. Groupthink is an interesting and terrifying thing that, you know, learn about, where everyone in a room would come up with a worse idea than any one person in that room would come up with, just because everyone's doing a little bit compromising. That brings up this think, pair, share.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a perfect segue.
Yeah. The whole room, there is no one solve all thing. That's why we like to break up our lessons into segments and into different activities, because a discussion would lead the whole room to come to a conclusion. That conclusion might not be the best conclusion, but it just involves everyone agreeing. And we feel successful when it's over because everyone agreed, but we've all made contentions and now it's not the best idea. Where in a think, pair, share environment, it's just you and one other person. It's typically someone you already have, you know, some sort of camaraderie with. And even if not, you know, that idea that it's just you and one other person, you're not making these massive, you know, contentions. You're just saying, this is my idea. Okay, I thought about it for a little bit. This is my idea. And then you share your ideas and then you bring that to the rest of the room, you know, and that can then facilitate a further discussion where we've already acknowledged that there's not one right answer. There's multiple different ways of going about it. And that's how you combat groupthink. Yeah, is, you know, you say that we're not trying to find the one best thing that this boardroom should do with their company. We're trying to find multiple avenues to success. And then let's talk about those avenues to success, right? And then we can maybe create a plan A or a plan B, or take a little bit from each. Because the true issue is that, you know, I wanted this, but I'm willing to take this. I wanted this, and then suddenly nothing's remarkable. You know, where innovation, it requires a little bit of guts, it requires a little bit of confidence, and it definitely doesn't require compromise. I think you need to be bold. So really, there's no room for that.
So do you recommend, especially when we're doing some of our learning assignments in the classroom, say I've got a classroom and maybe I have the equipment, but maybe I didn't budget for every student to be able to do e-learning, but I was able to budget for half of my classroom, half of my needs. You see this as an opportunity to now create that think, pair, share opportunity.
Absolutely.
In the virtual environment.
In a perfect scenario where I'm in a room with 40 students. Okay, in a perfect scenario, there's no 40 students. It's like 20.
That's right.
It's good public education, but in a perfect room, 20 students.
Yeah.
I have 20 cutting edge VR headsets. I'm not touching half of them. no matter what. It's not even just, oh, since I don't have them, let's embrace this new thing. It's not the way to go. The way to go is kind of what you were thinking already, where have one person on it and one person just watching what they're seeing. Or even better, have a group of four. One person on it, three people, you know, watching. Because they're going to teach each other. Absolutely. You know, they're going to instruct each other and they're going to have a more authentic experience. And they're going to retain more knowledge through that problem solving.
Yeah.
And through every single person having. I also believe that when every single person is doing something, then you immediately become a demonstrator and not a facilitator. Because you say, okay, everyone sees this button, click this one button. Now everyone's ready. Next step, everyone go to this. And that's, it's not engaging and it's really not effective.
No, absolutely.
So some of our limitations, I think the reason why education tends to not be funded so lucratively is because you can do a lot with a little. And a lot of it comes down to just what you're confident with and what you want to do. I'm not saying everyone should go tomorrow and change their content up to something that they're not comfortable with. But I challenge everyone in the room or everyone online, everyone, you know, listening to this right now, to take one thing and just make it, you know, your planning period thing or your weekend thing or your side project or next time you need to make new content instead of just cutting a video, maybe having it be a video that pauses and asks questions. You know, that's my input, you know, and that kind of leads me to the next thing. If you have any questions at all, please reach out. You know, reach out to DNR Learn, reach out to the HVAC ESCO group, but also just take my information down. You know, you can message me directly. I can tell you some more about some of those softwares if you have some ideas in mind. I don't, you know, I didn't plaster it during this presentation, but if you want, oh, you're talking about translation. What do you use for translation? Or what do you use to make your content more approachable? And once again, you know, look out for us. You'll see us. We'll be around. You know, I know the next convention I'm going to, you'll be there. So
exactly.
You know, see each other.
Yeah, we'll definitely be getting together at AHR to explore because I've learned so much about DNR just in these last couple of days. And it just really makes me start rethinking training and education in so many aspects. And, you know, it's just such a great accompanying solution for the classroom. And yes, it's difficult changing the way that we teach, but look at it as empowering yourself so that you can empower your classroom. You're picking up new tools. I mean, when we were in the field, we picked up new tools all the time because they were cool and they made us more efficient at what we did. Why wouldn't we want to start looking at new tools for our training and for our classrooms? And man,
you brought the best point. That's exactly I love a good metaphor, but you know, and making connections between anything is incredible, but that's the best I've seen right there. It's like in your field, you can struggle all the time doing this task, or you can get the new tool that makes it easier. Mm-hmm. Are you going to feel a little silly in the beginning with that new tool you don't know how to use? Yeah. Are you going to make some mistakes maybe? Yeah. Maybe you feel like you're wasting your time and you just go back to the other thing? Yes. But eventually, mm-hmm. you will be mm-hmm. much better for it, and every time you move forward, you'll be saving that tool. So
absolutely.
You can struggle in the classroom with people not being engaged. You can struggle with your trainings, you know, by not creating, you know, an authentic experience, mm-hmm. or you can struggle a little bit on your own time, learning something new and challenging yourself. And then later on, when you're doing the thing you love, which is the process or the teaching, you can enjoy it more.
David DeMiranda, I'm so grateful you joined us today.
I'm so grateful that you made time for me. Absolutely.
Oh, we got to finish up. I mean, we had twice as many slides we didn't even get through because we had such great content on this piece of it. So I encourage all of you to step out of your comfort zone a little bit, get a hold of David, learn a little bit more about new training opportunities for you in your classroom. If you're at AHR, stop by, learn about the products. We'll see everyone at the National HVACR Education Conference. And I look forward to these experiences. So I encourage all of you to reach out. And we'll catch you on the next episode as we dive a little bit deeper. Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate it. And look forward to seeing you all again next week.
On Did You Know, the Esco HVAC Show. David, I'll reconnect with you after I get this video cleaned up and I'll get you a final copy. And then you and I probably need to plan us another day to continue this conversation.
I would love to. Absolutely.
That's right, Paul. Yes, there's got to be a part two. Plus.
Sounds good. Yeah. I feel like today we talked a lot about the strategies and I would love to deep dive into some tools. So, you know, look forward to that for the next one.
I love it. All right, everyone. We'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.